big lover of Derek Carr. And we're back. 89.5 Ladies Night Part 2.
89.5 Ladies Night. So we've got, I'm going to do Baltimore. Shane's going to do the Bears. We're saving the Bears for last because they're the Bears and we love them. So let's just hop in. Let's talk Ravens.
Ravens Nation. All we know is purple and black. And if you're not a Ravens fan,
welcome.
Welcome to Baltimore, Maryland, M&T Bank Stadium, where opponents don't make it out alive unless we bury them.
What?
Where opponents don't make it out alive unless we bury them.
What?
Don't make it out alive unless we bury them.
What?
Sure.
I'm going to start with Todd Monken. He's the new offensive coordinator in Baltimore, replacing Greg Roman. Thank God. He's been all over the place. He was at the OC at Georgia for the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you, like, what's the rap sheet on this guy? Is he, like, a really run-oriented coach?
No, he's a pass-first
guy. Oh, no?
He's a pass-first guy.
Really?
And he's a tempo guy. They'll run way more plays.
Okay.
So last year, Baltimore was first in the league in 22 personnel. So for those of you that don't know, personnel, when they do numbers for personnel, the first number refers to running backs on the field. The second number refers to tight ends on the field. So 22 personnel is two running backs and two tight ends, which means one receiver, right?
Wow.
So they were first in the league in 22 personnel, and they were last in the league in 11 personnel, which is one back, one tight end, and three wide receivers. All right. They were in 11 personnel, so they had three wide receivers on a play. And on 12% of their plays, the NFL average was 61%.
Really?
They were like almost 40% below average for how often they use three receiver sets.
That's, well, I mean, it makes sense.
When Devin Duvernay is your wide receiver one.
Yeah. Right? So it's funny because even though they're the grind them out Ravens, they started becoming a top 10 passing rate team in neutral situations, but their spending at wide receiver has been so fucking abysmal while Lamar was on his rookie contract that it almost doesn't matter who's throwing the ball, except for Mahomes, when your receivers are Tylan Wallace, Devin Duvernay, James Proche, DeMarcus Robinson.
Garbage. It's pronounced Proche. It's French. Oh,
that's a good point.
Lamar shit talked the GM on Twitter about that. Mm-hmm. That was the best thing ever.
And he was right. So the offensive line is a top five unit going into this season. The three sources I use have them ranked fourth, and third. Here's something that I think really matters. According to reports, this is going to be the first time in his career that Lamar Jackson is given the reins to call audibles.
Are you serious? He's never been able to call audibles in the last Correct. 4 years of his career?
For real?
That's crazy.
It is, as Warren Sharp said, quote, coaching malpractice to not allow your quarterback to make adjustments at the line when he gets there.
Yeah, that's shocking to me.
Yes.
Dude, that's like old man boomerism narcissism.
Yep. Run my play. So outside of his rookie year, Lamar has never finished below quarterback 8 in fantasy points per game. He's also missed 11 games in his career, and even though I'm really sick of the whole running quarterbacks get hurt more narrative, it would be foolish to pretend like Lamar's always healthy. When I was writing my Bills stuff, I made a whole to-do about Josh Allen's rushing production, but I gotta lock in right now that I'll stump for Lamar the same way. He's gonna put up 750 rushing yards. Period.
Before you go into your Lamar fanning, do you think he's the best value of ROI on quarterback this year in like the top 8 quarterbacks you can draft?
Yeah, absolutely. You can get Lamar, you know, around Lawrence, right? Sometimes yeah. It's Burrow, Herbert, Lamar, Fields, Lawrence, right? I want Lamar out of that group.
Yeah.
So an argument could be made that his rushing productivity could take a hit since most of his rushing has come off design plays instead of scrambles. But a less run-centric offense, I think, means the defensive boxes he's rushing against won't rushing against won't have like 10 dudes in them.
Okay.
The Ravens, they're not stupid. They know that using Lamar's legs is the best thing their offense does. So I would still expect Lamar to get a ton of rushing work this year. Under Todd Monken in Georgia, quarterback Stetson Bennett had over 55 carries in back-to-back years. So we know that it's a part of the playbook.
And he runs like a 5-second 40.
Yes, he runs like a deer that's been shot. The upgrade in the receiving room is real and will help Lamar return stronger value as a drop-back passer, something that he's historically been about league average in. However, now that he has guys that can make plays at all three levels of the defense, which is something you could argue he never really had before, like, it's time for the step forward. He's much less risk-averse than you'd expect. He was actually 43rd in the NFL in interceptable passes last season.
Damn, that's crazy.
43rd?
Yep. Well, I mean, that counts everyone that threw passes, he's still lower than average in interceptable passes. And if all of his targets last year were condensed into a single player, that player would have ranked 78th in the NFL in separation generated from their defender.
Yuck.
Boo. So I think there's no denying he's going to return a top 10 season in points per game, but I think the perceived injury risk and unknown nature of the offense is baked into his price. I'm glad to take him and expect a top 5 finish this year because I think the dip on him is stupid. So, Lamar Jackson on 4-for-4 is quarterback 4. Lamar Jackson or Joe Burrow?
Give me a ceiling, dude. Give me the rushing guy.
Ryan?
That's a tough one. I think I'm going to go Joe Burrow.
Okay. Lamar Jackson or Justin Herbert?
If I'm keeping my logic, it's got to be Lamar. But the homer in me says 50 touchdowns from Herbert this year.
I know, right? I think I'm going to go with Herbert just because of the... I think he's bound to have his career year this year.
I didn't know he had the second most yards out of all quarterbacks last year with how shitty he was.
Herbie?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm not going to ask you this one, Shane, because I don't want to spoil yours. So I'm just going to ask Ryan. Lamar Jackson or Justin Fields?
Fields.
Okay. All right, so let's move on. Let's talk about the running game. Just want to let you guys know that Kenyon Drake led this team with 20 red zone carries last year.
For real?
Yes. That is bad. So it's crazy how people are underselling Lamar due to injury risk while J.K. Dobbins seems to be a screaming buy everywhere. He's missed 27 of the 50 games Baltimore has played since he was drafted, and there's always the potential that he's going to try to hold out for more money since this is the final year of his rookie deal. There's reason to believe he could return to the form he showed in the last four games of the year, where he carried the ball 57 times for 397 yards. It's hard to project the splits Dobbins had since him and Lamar were both injured and in and out of the lineup, but when he's not with Lamar, it sucked. In games where Huntley started, Dobbins had 6 more carries and 70 more yards per game. So, man, I don't know. It was a big old fucking mess. Dobbins was top 2 in the league in numbers and runs when he was going against 7 or more guys in the box. So hopefully if they're, you know, they have good receivers, offense is spread out a little bit, he won't have to run against a whole bunch of linebackers. He had a handful of top like RB1 finishes last year, and they all revolved around him getting into the end zone.
Yeah, because he had what, like 120 point game?
Yeah.
With 2 touchdowns. That was like week 4 or something like that.
It was, yeah. And then before he went out again.
Yeah.
The offense taking a step forward means he's going to get more looks in the red zone, but everyone needs to stay healthy and he needs to get a higher snap share. He broke 50% of snaps one time last year.
Really?
Yeah. So if he's on the field more, it's reasonable to see him having a strong year. He's a blob guy in that fourth through seventh round dead zone. He's got some upside. An improved offense may help him earn that second contract, but I think he's limited for fantasy because he is part of a three-headed monster in the red zone between him, Edwards, and Lamar.
Yeah, that's true.
So, gentlemen, J.K. Dobbins or Antonio Gibson?
That's fucking gross.
Yeah. I hate Gibson this year, so I'm going to go Dobbins.
I'm going back to the well, bro. Give me eighth round Gibson over fourth round Dobbins.
J.K. Dobbins or DeAndre Swift?
Oh, God, dude. This is like being like, hey, you got to eat this shit sandwich or this vomit soup.
Yep, bring it on.
I'm going Dobbins still.
Yeah, I don't want to, but yeah.
Okay, so let's move on. Gus Edwards was beaten up. I think they're going to kind of snap share split. I think Gus is a complimentary back, but like he's doesn't do anything for me. So let's move on. Let's go pass catchers. Only Mark Andrews, Devin Duvernay, and DeMarcus Robinson had over 400 receiving yards for the Ravens last year. This is the, best room of pass catchers Lamar's ever had. So the hope is that the next step in the passing game will occur. And so the team hasn't given him anything. You have a generational quarterback and you decide to give him like one receiver in his career. The receivers had the fifth highest drop rate. They were fifth worst in getting yards after the catch. And the wide receivers on this team were 32nd in the league when it comes to how often they were targeted on first and second down. Really? So it's insane to talk about how much production is being vacated by the loss of DeMarcus Robinson. But he had the most snaps of any Baltimore receiver. So I guess the question is, who gets the DeMarcus Robinson targets?
Right.
So we'll start with Odell. Odell took all of 2022 off, recovering from his ACL tear in the Super Bowl. You could take it one of two ways in my mind. Either he's rested and ready to come back, or the market for a 30-year-old wide receiver that hasn't been an alpha since 2019 is diminished.
Yeah, I was going to ask, was that time off, quote unquote, was that due to him, or is that because nobody wanted to pay him that $35 million contract that he wanted?
I think he could have reasonably come back in December and helped the team in a playoff run.
Yeah.
We've spent a lot of time this offseason predicting that he's not going to finish the year. He's only played every game in a season twice, so that's probably a good bet. He's still an NFL wide receiver. His playoff run in 2021 speaks for itself when he went ballistic and was instrumental in that Rams title. I just think putting eggs in this basket to ask Beckham to be the top guy is short-sighted. 4-for-4 has him at wide receiver 45, and I don't even care to ask you if you'd put him over anyone because the rest of this room is much more interesting. Rashad Bateman is yet another key Baltimore offensive skill position player that can't seem to stay on the field. Have you heard that before?
Hey, they yes. did fire that grouping.
Yeah, thank God. Hopefully a new training staff will like allow their players to play. When he's on, though, when Bateman's on the field, he's the intermediate to deep threat guy. He averaged 11 yards per catch his rookie year and 19 yards per catch last year. He's going to be on the outside, and he's a strong separator. He wins with speed and route running. He's the type of guy that can turn 4 to 5 targets into 60 yards. If he becomes the alpha wide receiver and can get 80 to 100 targets, I think we're flirting with a low wide receiver to finish because he's got the yards after catch ability. And if this offense is less of like catch this ball for 8 yards and fall down, Bateman should feast. I'm actually kind of bullish on Rashad Bateman because I do believe Lamar Jackson loves the deep ball, throws a good one, and Bateman can make his catches count. Last year, he was touchdown dependent. This year, I don't think he will be. He was okay. Super, super cheap when I did this. He was wide receiver 48 on 4-for-4
below OBJ?
Wow. Yes.
Dude,
so
people are out.
So Rashad Bateman or Kadarius Toney?
Hey, it's a Kadarius Toney sighting.
There he is.
You know what, dude? I think I'm going Bateman. Like, they drafted the guy. Like, KC's KC. We've talked our shit about it. It's Kelsey and Jerick McKinnon who we want there.
Yep.
I'm going Toney.
All right. Shoot, I thought you were going to go Bateman. This was the one this is the one that I thought was going to trip Ryan up. Rashad Bateman or George Pickens?
Ooh. No, I'm going to go Bateman.
Okay.
I asked you before we started this podcast, could we please not talk Steelers again? Because we've covered these motherfuckers way too many times that I've cared to talk about. I think I go Bateman.
Okay. And then this one's for Shane, Rashad Bateman, or Elijah Moore.
Oh, my guy.
I'm still going Bateman.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't believe in Elijah Moore anymore.
I believe in Elijah Moore, but I do not believe Deshaun Watson has it anymore.
All right. So let's move on. Zay Flowers was my wide receiver 2 before the draft, and I still think he's my dynasty wide receiver 2. It's a crowded room in Baltimore, and he's most likely competing with Mark Andrews for a short-range target share, but there's no reason why he couldn't come in and immediately demand targets in this offense. He was one of, if not the best route runner in this class, and his entire college tape is filled with him beating the shit out of a cornerback, only to have the quarterback miss him. Just constantly. He's going to get open quickly, and if Lamar's pass pro doesn't hold up, he has a ton of short-range options to get the ball off to in a hurry. I think he's going to have some solid weeks. He might not score much, which means his ceiling's kind of low, but in deeper leagues, you could do worse at the end of your bench. Also, you never know with this team, as we have seen before, especially with OBJ. Okay. Zay Flowers fucking free. He's wide receiver 88 on 4-for-4. I'm going to just give you one because I don't want to ask you about Sky Moore or Allen Robinson. Zay Flowers or Alec Pierce?
Ooh. I'll go with Flowers. They got the better quarterback.
Okay.
Slander. after listening to JJ Zacharyson's podcast, we'll talk about the Chicago portion. RPO setups typically are very passive to one guy, and I think Pittman is the guy in Indy and higher draft capital. So I'm going Flowers.
Okay. So let's move on to tight ends. Mark Andrews, who I think is certainly the second biggest beneficiary of this Ravens offseason. Lamar came back. There's a new OC in town, and having new receivers means he isn't going to be constantly triple teamed. Like, no matter what, he's going to be a top 3 tight end in fantasy points per game. So the question really is just, is he worth taking over TJ Hockenson? So I can see the argument for both. Andrews, it's like, he's the number 1 target on a lower volume passing offense, while Hockenson is number 2 on a high volume, right?
Right. Well, there was only one tight end last year that finished with a better target share, and that was Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts was something like 25%. Mark Andrews was right around that too, but and then Kelsey was below that. But
yeah, Andrews' target share was nuts. And it's gonna probably go down just because there are wide receivers there, but the quality of target is gonna go up. You know,
sure.
Safe, not necessarily a safety over the top. He was also one of 2 tight ends last year that had over 500 unrealized air yards, a stat which I was told on the internet isn't real or doesn't matter. So his 5 touchdowns last year should also increase. And look, I mean, the guy did have 7 more red zone targets than anyone else on the team.
Sure.
He had 73 catches on 113 targets last year, but so much of that came from Tyler Huntley that if we had boosted his rates with Lamar through 17 games, it would have looked closer to 2021 when he had 154 targets, 107 catches, 1,300 yards, and finished tight end one in fantasy points per game.
I'm going to go Ryan right now. I think Mark Andrews gets 10 touchdowns this year.
Ooh, double digits. I like it.
I love it. So I didn't want to project his ceiling.
And yeah. I honestly don't think that that's unrealistic at all. I mean,
that's his ceiling, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't want to project his ceiling. So I'm putting him at about 75 to 80% of that. So that's about 123 targets, 86 catches, 1,045 yards, 8 touchdowns. That's tight end two.
Yeah, that's better than any fourth round wide receiver that you're drafting.
That is correct. If you're betting on the Ravens to do well this year, it's going to start with Lamar to Andrews, same as it ever was.
Hell yeah.
As I mentioned earlier, the Ravens going from two tight end personnel packages at the highest rate in the league to anything else is going to help Andrews get open, but RIP Isaiah Likely snap count, barring injury. Like,
oh no.
Dude, listen to this. They use two tight ends so much that Isaiah Likely had 300 pass snaps last year.
Oh my God.
That's crazy.
Yeah, there's no way. It's just not happening. With all the money they put into the wide receiver room, like, if Likely is fantasy relevant, that means Andrews hurt or the wide receiver room has just been fucking decimated.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, gentlemen, Mark Andrews or TJ Hockenson?
Ooh. Nah, Mark Andrews.
I was reading some Kirk stats today, and he's kind of due for a regression based on how that season worked last year. And they also drafted Jordan Addison. So I think ultimately Hockenson's shares go down in that room. So I'm going the number one, Mark Andrews here.
Okay. So let's end with a fun little activity. I want to try to break down a Ravens target setup for next year. So they had 448 targets in one of the heaviest run offenses in the league. So we're going to boost it up to 500.
Okay.
So I'm actually going to boost up my Andrews prediction here. I'm going to say he's going to get 135 targets.
That's where I was going to put him.
So that means that Bateman, as the main boundary guy, should get about 95. I have Odell at 75, be it due to low volume or injury, either or. I think Zay Flowers gets about 50. Likely should get about 25. Running backs got about 55 last year. I think that's what they get again this year. Zay Flowers at 50, and various Jagoff wide receivers will get about 65. That would be an ideal balance for fantasy. I think that puts Andrews at tight end two. I think that puts Rashad Bateman in the mid-20s wide receiver finish, and I think that makes both of them buys at their current cost.
Sure.
Yeah, so that is the Baltimore Ravens, a team that, I really think that there's some juice there to them winning the division. I don't think it's going to necessarily happen, but I think the AFC is so loaded that Baltimore would be like the 3 seed in the NFC.
Yeah. I mean, okay. We'll see how Zach Taylor plays himself out of his winning position this year, right?
Yeah, no shit.
Of talent, but yeah, they're a wild card team, right?
For should sure. be. I mean, they were with Tyler Huntley.
Yeah. Going all right, 17 points a game.
All right, so let's stretch. We're gonna do the Bears here. This is I'm gonna cue the theme music, so I'll just have it playing gently under you the whole time you're talking.
Fucking strap in.
Wait, did you do the Greg Olsen rap?
Oh yeah, we'll put in the Greg Olsen rap too. Yeah. She was getting fucked on the seventh floor. No, yeah, yeah. If that bitch only knew that she was getting muddied by the whole crew, what would she do? What's your name?
G-Reg,
what you do?
Get hit,
how you do?
Drop my drawers and let her see my third leg. Chilling on the seventh floor, I gotta let these chickens know. Big Greg is in the house and I finna make these hoes choke. On my balls, on my dick, then I'm busting up quick. On her face, on her chest, stick my dick between her breasts. Come on fellas, let's get weird, stick your dick up in her ear. While I'm laughing at these guys, a second to all in her eyes.
That's how we do it, son.
In her eyes.
If your hoe only know that she was getting fucked on the seventh floor.
So even though I did write 6 pages on this guy, I feel like this is going to be more or less an exercise of all three of us talking this shit out.
Let's talk it out, baby.
So I do apologize for off the rip to all the Chicago viewers if I do say anything negative that offends you. I'm just reading you data points and making assumptions based on those data points. So my bad.
You will not say one bad thing.
So we're going to get the bad out of the way first, like I usually do. So last year, the defense was atrocious. Offensive line let Justin Fields fight for his life every play, for every snap that he was on.
Yep.
Outside of his rushing stats, Justin Fields was not good for fantasy. He threw for 34 successful passes. Sorry, he threw for 34 attempts in 4 games. Granted, one of those was the Typhoon game, but an average of 16.75 pass attempts per game. Even with one being in terrible weather, is a really big red flag that that kind of faded as the season progressed. By week 8, kind of is when Justin Fields started taking off. His efficiency went up. He was throwing around 22 times per game because Matt Eberflus also realized that if you let the guy who can run really well run the ball on thirds down when your other team members cannot convert the third down, you kind of score more points. And that's kind of good for your team to have a shot, because there was what, like...
Yeah.
8 or 9 games that the Bears were within one score of.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they only won one of them.
Yep. So the Bears ranked bottom 5 in pass attempts, red zone attempts, team pass per game, and protection rate as they ran the ball the most amount of times because the coaching staff knew that they had assortment of crumbs to catch the balls last year. So Fields threw for 2,200 passing yards, ranked 23 in pressured throws. A big number is bad in this instance. 11th yes. in danger plays, 12th interceptable passes, higher is bad, 25th in accuracy, and low 20s in completion percentage, play action completion, and clean pocket completion. So accuracy was not good for him. But as we've seen with guys like Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, those are fixable measures.
Did you hear about the NFL record Justin Fields set last year?
Was it the most rush attempts?
Yeah.
No, his 14.7% sack rate was an NFL record.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I did read that.
NFL record, like of all time.
Which they did work on, right? They did use their number one pick to draft an offensive line.
Well, it's funny because that number got better. Before the bye, he was getting sacked on 16.7% of his dropbacks.
And that's like ridiculous. And that's why the data kind of needs some context, right? Like, I know we talked about this the other day of data is data, but data needs context. Like, his accuracy is so shitty because he had like 2.5 seconds to release the ball.
Yes.
Otherwise, he'd run for 5 seconds to hopefully thread the needle to a guy who's going to sell insurance in a year, right?
Yep.
Right.
They basically had a massive churn at talent because the GM was like, we're going to rip off the Band-Aid. We're shedding old contracts. We're going to basically, this is our rebuild time. So just get ready to suck ass. Trust the process. So we're going to only focus on offense. Otherwise, this episode's going to be 17 hours long, even though it is going to be relatively large. So Tony and Ryan will fill us in the gaps after if I miss stuff. So the Bears re-signed one lineman while shedding 3. One lineman was signed in free agency while Travis Homer was being picked up because he's great in pass protection. That's kind of his only role that I foresee him to be in fantasy.
Yep.
So don't ever draft him.
No.
And we did see the Bears continually churn like our homie Hunter does in drafts where they just kept trading back to gain more draft capital, which you need on a depleted team, right? You need as many lottery shots as yep. you can possibly have with a team that's so depleted of talent.
Yep.
So for fantasy related purposes, the Bears got Darnell Wright, Roshan, and Tyler Scott.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So how do you guys feel about the O-line? Because like on the surface for me, getting rid of 3 guys to draft one and sign one isn't enough of a 1-to-1 replacement ratio, but I mean, obviously talent does take a step up and stuff like that. So what do you guys think about that?
I don't think they did enough in the draft. I mean, in free agency, I really think it's going to be better than it was last year. I mean, I can only hope, but
yeah, you can't be last again.
Yeah. They're still not even close to having a great O-line at all, but they should scheme Fields on some better plays, and hopefully, I don't know, it's not the best.
If the run sets up the pass well, this is a non-issue, right? The problem with Darnell Wright is that it was at Tennessee, and those are just three steps and throw. So he's not the most polished tackle prospect, but the Bears were set at guard. And so moving Whitehair from guard to center, losing Mustafer, I showed you that video, Shane, of Sam Mustafer just casually running away from the play. Like, it's addition through subtraction, right? It's terrible. And so, like, anything's better. League average is worlds better than what Fields was working with last year.
Right.
So I think next year they have two firsts. If they get a chance to go get a stud tackle, you take it. Like, I know we all joke, like, yeah, man, wait till Fields has Marvin Harrison Jr. But, like, I would rather them get another offensive lineman so I don't have to watch Justin getting, you know, his emaciated, lifeless body pulled off the turf after he throws a 50-yard pass to Dante fucking Pettis.
Well, yeah, no, that's like, you build a foundation around, like, you have to build the trenches, but obviously, like, your team is successful based on a quarterback, and this is Fields' third year. Like, they're approaching the time frame of when they need to decide what they're going to do. And
yep.
If Fields doesn't pan out and you still spend a top-end draft talent for a lineman, you have the core built for the replacement, right? So it is fundamentally the correct thing to do as a franchise. Like, yeah, we love watching Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow out there, but I would also like not to watch have dude get massacred every play, right?
And like, Ryan, I sent this to Shane. I had a whole list. I compared all the advanced stats Fields year two to Jalen Hurts year two, and they're like, Shane, you could back me up on this. It's like they're staggeringly similar.
It's like a 1-to-1. We'll get into that because I did this little exercise of addition of elite wide receivers and quarterbacks and stuff like
okay.
that. Because it is tied into that.
But like the big difference that I wanted to just say before we do that is that like the Eagles have excellent offensive line play.
Top five.
The Bears do not.
And even the Bills, I was looking at their statistics, they have like top 10. You know what I mean? That's something that I don't ever really look at, right? You know, no one ever really talks about the Bills offensive line, but they're top 10 too.
Right. So like they're going to add, they're running like the LaCroix version of what the Eagles did. And the thing that makes the two different is the offensive line core. And if Wright hits and you've got Braxton Jones as left tackle, Tevin Jenkins as left guard, and a strong Darnell Wright on the right side, that's three of the five spots. You know what I mean? Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah. And then your free agency money too, you guys. I know you have a big, pretty open free agency cap space next year too, where you can use that money for free agents.
Yep.
All right. So we're going to move on to DJ Moore, as we all saw in the Discord and social media, how Bears fans cried tears of joy when you guys got that haul from Carolina and DJ Moore came along with that, because Ryan Poles said, hey, instead of us having to try to get Hopkins or spend their overall ninth pick for JSN, this is an issue that's solved for us now.
Right.
So I did this quick little bullshit correlation. It might not even mean anything, but I just want to see like what other quarterbacks did with the addition of elite wide receivers. So I'd use Josh Allen before Diggs, Jalen Hurts before AJ Brown, Joe Burrow before Chase. I extrapolated data to take out the injury based on that to figure out kind of his pace, where he was going to be.
Per game, sure.
Yeah, and then Tua before Tyreek. Okay. So before Diggs, Josh Allen threw for 3,089 yards with a 6-point over his three seasons, or two seasons without him. These are all averages. 6.7 yards per attempt, 58% completion percentage. with Diggs, he threw for 4,411 yards, 7.43 yards per attempt, 65% completion percentage average. Jalen Hurts, 3,144 yards, 6.3 yards per attempt, 61% accuracy. After A.J. Brown, 3,701 yards, 8.0 yards per attempt, 66.5% accuracy. There you go. Burrow before Chase, 3,853.8 yards, 6.7 yards per attempt, 65.3% accuracy. After Ja'Marr Chase, 4,543 yards, 8.1 yards per attempt, 69.35% accuracy. Tua before Tyreek, 2,653 yards, 6.8 yards per attempt, 67.8%. After Tyreek, 3,548 yards, 8.9 yards per attempt, 64.8%. I didn't average those because he played 10 games in each, so I felt it was enough of a sample size to value that. So outside of Tua not having his firmware update after his brain got turned into mashed potatoes, every quarterback saw an increase in yards, yards per attempt, and overall accuracy because obviously the wide receiver talent elevates the quarterback. And I'm not going to sit here and say DJ Moore is Stephon Diggs, AJ Brown, Ja'Marr Chase, Tyreek, but he's a top 15 talent in NFL and he has that kind of ceiling, right? So also kind of weirdly enough, after these players were brought in, you think their volume would, I mean, their volume obviously did increase, but there also was an increase in designed run plays between Allen, Hurts and Burrow. Granted, Burrow wasn't significant enough like Josh Allen or Hurts, but he still saw around 15 to 20 more designed run plays with him as the offense opened up more. So,
and that's, well, that's kind of what we're saying, right? With Lamar, it's like these coordinators still know that like running the ball with this QB is the best thing our offense does. We're going to be passing more, but we still have to give our quarterback opportunities to make it happen.
Well, yeah. And then also too, like it's also a call on the defense of like, hey, you've been covering these guys all day long, and now you think what's going to happen. Now I have a 20-yard rushing lane open, yep. Right?
Oh, yeah.
So you can exploit the defense. And the only caveats I have with these, with this data set is there's not an elite, quote unquote, or top 10 comparable wide receiver two in the room with DJ Moore like the other teams have. So he doesn't have, I mean, obviously Diggs is the anomaly. But there's no Smitty, there's no Higgins, there's no Waddle, and the offensive line is a little bit down. But I still believe that even though these caveats are there, that the leap can still happen.
Sure.
Because if I average all these changes across these things, you can estimate not conservatively, but the ceiling of 870 more throwing yards, 1.3% more yards per attempt, and a 5.1% increase in accuracy from Fields based on these increase in numbers that we saw across these guys who obtained elite wide receivers. So this would put Justin Fields within 1,112 yards, 8.4 yards per attempt, 65.4 completion percentage, which is pretty much in the elite category in comparison to other people of the league. So as we'll see an increase in volume, we'll also see a decrease in rushing attempts. But I also think that we're going to kind of see something more along the lines of Hurts, where even though he's running for his life less, he'll have more designed run attempts.
Yeah.
They're going to utilize him and his biggest skill set of rushing, obviously.
Yep.
So last year, Fields had 160 attempts last year. Almost 50% were from scrambles. But like I said, if we'll see that number drop because O-line gets better, scheme gets better. I kind of have him down at 140 attempts, but an increase of around 80 to 90 designed rushing plays. And we can still potentially see an 800-yard rushing season. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I think that's kind of a realistic conservative regression compared to what he had last year.
Yeah.
And I know Tony and I talked about this off air. Fields is obviously going to throw the ball more than 318 times this year. My conservative estimate is 375, which averages out to 23 attempts. But Tony has a higher number, which was what, 400? That's what you said?
Yeah, I had about 400.
Which is...
So about 26 to 28?
Yeah, which is not unreasonable at all, right? Like Kenny Pickett can throw for 26 to 35 throws a game. Justin Fields can do it, especially when he was like a quote-unquote designed pocket passer in Ohio, right? Like
yes.
The translation can still occur. And I don't feel like that jump is supreme enough to ask. I didn't actually look at the passing volume with all those guys who I talked about earlier, but I'm assuming that their attempts also went up per game as well, within a 5 to 6% or 5 to 6 attempts per game. So as of right now, I'm going to hit you guys with a what if. So Fields QB 6. So Burrow, Herbert, or Fields?
Fields.
Ooh. God, that's hard. Burrow.
All right, so in another realm of positions, Christian Kirk, Joe Mixon, or Justin Fields?
That's probably, it's probably what, round 5?
Yes, round 5.
I'm going Mixon on the off chance that he doesn't have any trouble and is the lead back on the best offense of the three.
I like that option. So I'm going to move on to the kingmaker himself, DJ Moore. So we all know DJ Moore being the GOAT of 1,100 yards and 4 touchdown average in a season. So I'm going to list you off the players that have thrown DJ Moore the ball in his career in Carolina. So he had the corpse of Cam Newton. Oof. Taylor Heinicke, Kyle Allen, Will Greer, Teddy Two Gloves, PJ Walker, Sam Darnold, the reanimated corpse of Cam Newton, and Baker Mayfield.
Woof.
So saying that Fields is the best quarterback he's ever played with is pretty on brand. And also DJ Moore is also the best receiver that Justin Fields has ever played with in the NFL.
Yes.
So in the 5 years in Carolina, DJ Moore had an average of 116 yards per year with a 14.3 yards per reception, which even in a bum room is extremely good for a wide receiver. DJ Moore primarily lines up out wide, which is going to translate to Chicago as he's the best wide receiver in that room by a wide margin with a 5.1 yards after the catch average. DJ Moore's average depth of target is 12, while Fields is currently 9.8. So while that target really isn't that sweet spot like we want,
it's close.
Their quarterbacks. It's close, and we're going to see an increase, obviously, in attempts because last year Fields' target was lower because he was throwing to Kmet, N'Keal Harry, and Velus Jones. Because you can't really throw the ball very far with those guys. So yeah. there was roughly 140 targets to the outside position for wide receivers, so the probability of DJ Moore getting 116 targets seems like the floor for him right now, personally, for me. Yep. Especially after listening to the RPO episode of the Late Round Podcast from JJ Zacharyson. It's probably one of the most dense 15 minutes I've ever listened to in my life. It's very convoluted, but very, very precise and gets to the overall point, which I'm going to make right now, is basically in RPO systems with mobile quarterbacks, there's a hyper-targeting in general of one receiver. So Tony and I's initial response of being down on DJ Moore compared to consensus seems kind of moot as of right now after doing this. And there is light at the end of the tunnel. Same with Michael Pittman. I'm not going to say that they're going to finish within a certain range, but I think they're going to perform at least at ADP expectations. So I'm not going to sit here and say DJ Moore finishes wide receiver 1 or wide receiver 10, as the volume just isn't there for me as of right now. In that sort of massive league-winning play like the Cooper Kupp expectation like we saw, or not expectation, but the anomaly that we saw. But I do believe that he can return on his wide receiver 26 ranking to something I would be comfortable with around wide receiver 16 to 20. So your first flex if you're going wide receiver heavy or wide receiver 2 in a different type of setup. So again, same fifth-ish round. DJ Moore, Christian Kirk, Mike Williams.
DJ Moore, Christian Kirk, Mike Williams. Kirk.
My initial response was Kirk, but I'm going to go DJ Moore just because I want the alpha.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, next one. Speaking of alphas, D-Hop, DJ Moore, or Brandon Ayuk?
Yeah, you're going to make me keep going DJ Moore. I'm going to look like a fucking homer.
I'll go DJ Moore.
What position does D-Hop, or what team does D-Hop go to where he gets taken over DJ Moore?
Yeah, I guess that's the main question, right?
Houston.
Back to Houston, huh?
It's like the only choice. It's the only choice. Other than that, it's a low passing volume.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I can't put my finger on a team that jumps out. Maybe like the Rams.
Do they have enough money to pay for him?
No, but
trade Cooper Kupp to
fuck it.
Whoever. All right, Tony, I'm going to let you have the floor right now. Talk your Chase Claypool shit, because I saw his split with Fields and I almost barfed at the 57 projected targets based on pace, and he's wide receiver 88 right now.
So depending on who you ask, Chase Claypool is either someone the organization hates or progressing nicely. Just, it seems like it changes by the day. His numbers weren't great for fantasy after joining the Bears, but like I perked up a little bit. He played 7 games for Chicago, and one of those games was with Trevor Siemian. So like, just toss that out. So really, through 6 games, he had 29 targets. And since I'm a degenerate and the Bears are, you know, my hometown team, I noticed that outside of a few like deep balls, Claypool was the big slot, which is the role that he played successfully in Pittsburgh. And I think that's a role the Bears want him to be, right? You've got Moore on one side, Mooney on the other, and you have Claypool working the underneath. If we've established that the two boundary receivers are longer yards per attempt guys, which Moore and Mooney historically are, I feel like this gives Claypool a clearer path to like 75 targets. If he's getting 5 targets a game, like, now I don't think that these are like, he's going to have a shorter, you know, yards per attempt. He's not going to have a ton of air yards. I don't think he's like a fantasy relevant player on a weekly basis, but I think there's a chance he has the second most catches on this team in 2023.
Okay. See, that's where I was confused at, because the data that I saw on it was either DFL or Player Profiler. I think it might've been DFL for, or no, PFF, sorry. That Mooney had the most slot snaps in that regard. I mean, obviously they didn't have a lot of overlap on their play, but I think Mooney had like 60% on average out of the slot.
Mooney,
they can obviously move him around.
Right. And actually, like, when a lot of his production came, his breakout 2021 from the other boundary spot, aside from Allen Robinson.
Okay.
And so, like, now that he's not being asked to be the one, I think he could return to be a decent two. He was wide receiver 27 in 2021.
Yeah. And he was on pace. I was looking at the numbers. He was on pace for 85 targets before he got hurt with 5.3 targets per game.
And it would have been more. It would have been more if the offense did anything.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. Like, in some of the best ball tournaments, the larger best ball tournaments, I've been taking Claypool as my 18th round pick, because it's free. Who cares?
Yeah. Well, so is Rondale Moore. Sorry, he's in my either or. Is Mooney, where Mooney's been slept on too. He's wide receiver 58 right now, and I still think that he can retain his target share, especially if the volume is going up in that team, where I don't think it's improbable that he can get around 90 targets this year, right?
I just don't disagree at all.
So we'll see that. That was pretty much the gist. I kind of combined the two because I don't know how fantasy relevant anybody's chasing these guys, but they are options on this team. Of they could be your flex at some point during the season.
Sure.
Mooney's between Jacoby and Rondale.
Give me Mooney, because I don't know what the slot's going to look like in Arizona, and I don't know how much I want the wide receiver two on a Jimmy G quarterback team.
Is this going to be the year where we draft a Chicago Bear wide receiver?
Hey, man, I have a bunch of Justin Fields exposure in best ball.
Yeah, I haven't gotten any Bears yet in best ball or even thought about it, but
we're going Mooney then. All right.
Mooney it is. Let's ride.
All right, so we're on to the blob now. Chicago brought in the king of the blob, Blob Tonyan.
Yeah.
So local outside, boy. Outside of Ryan's shitty touchdown of the week, I'm not talking about Bob Tonyan.
His family is about 10 miles away from me right now.
Get well, tickets, please.
And, well, I mean, he played in Getsy's scheme in Green Bay. Like, he knows the offense.
I just view him as, like, the red zone threat, right? Like, that's just what he's good at. Put him in within 10. Have him run a fucking out route. Touchdown, right?
There you go.
Not out of the realm of possibility. So he's a DFS play. Why not? On to Cole Kmet. As we talked on episode 77, Cole Kmet is a sell and a giant smoke and mirrors to me. Kmet's 5.2 average target per game was when Mooney was out and will come down, obviously, as DJ Moore's coming in. All the guys are coming healthy. Chase Claypool's getting acclimated to the offense. I have him at around 65 targets this year, which isn't terrible, but it's still a fade of tight end position because he's tight end 17 between Gerald Everett and Tyler Higbee. So I don't really want to play that game. And
no.
we can do much better at that position.
Imagine being a tight end and leading your team in targets and being tight end 16 in fantasy points per game.
And you had like 500 yards on the year, right?
He had 7 touchdowns and 4 of those were in 2 games.
Yeah. That's why they're not paid.
Garbage.
Right. So now that we're done with all that stuff, we're going to spin the wheel on who you want to play based on ADP. And basically these guys are similar to each other in play style. So the Bears had 369 rush attempts last year with 58 passes going to the running back room last year. There's 3 running backs in the room now that Monty's gone. Obviously Travis Homer doesn't really count for fantasy relevancy. They have Herbert, Foreman, and Roshan. So while most of fantasy analysts, like, I'm seeing a wide discrepancy with them only ever talking about 2 guys. We've been really honed in on Roshan for sure because we're Roshan guys. We talked about last week how you guys don't talk about Herbert, so I'm going Foreman. Herbert was pretty quiet last year, splitting basically the backfield with Monty. He had 129 rushes for 749 yards, averaging 4.7 yards per carry with 4 touchdowns, while Monty was primarily the pass catcher and the dominant shareholder. I think he had like over 200 touches, right? 220, yeah. Something like that. However, even though that yards per carry number is high, Herbert is very much like a Ken Walker, where a lot of his plays or his yardage comes from boosts of breakaways. So Herbert had 7 rushes that accounted for 228 yards from breakaway, which is 10 to 20 yards in the NFL. But he still, per player profile, he had the 5th most overall true yards per carry with in the NFL. So he can still be efficient, especially when his snap shares are increasing and he is being technically handed the keys to this offense. But there also is the signal of them bringing in a guy and drafting a guy.
Right.
So as of right now, all these guys, Roshan, Herbert, and Foreman, are all within 15 slots of each other in running backs. So running back 40, this is kind of a layup for, I believe, at least Tony, is Herbert, McKinnon, or Jamal Williams?
McKinnon.
Ooh. Jamal Williams.
It is funny to see him like fall from grace already, where everybody kind of realized, oh, it was just touchdown volume.
Yep.
It's going to be the same thing, though, in New Orleans. He's going to get them fantasy points.
Chris Olave, baby. So solving a 2-headed monster is really difficult in fantasy, but solving a 3-headed is almost impossible to project, especially when Fields is taking a majority of the rushing pie and a majority of the red zone attempts. So Herbert has been notorious for needing to improve his pass blocking, and the Bears did bring in 3 other running backs, which has me down on Herbert, even on his metrics and his utilization. So he might be the first or second down back initially to start the season. Foreman and Herbert kind of have the same metrics, with Herbert having a slight edge in efficiency. So they're basically the same player to me. One's just older and one's more of a bruiser. But also Foreman is RB51. So personally, I'm going to go with the guy who's cheaper, just based on, I'm assuming that they're going to play a similar type of role. Sure, Foreman might get phased out of the offense based on him being older, him not being in the system as long. And I'm not really excited to play one of these guys unless I have a bye week fill-in or an injury fill-in off the waiver wire. So as of right now, it's Donta Foreman, Kenny Gainwell, or Raheem Mostert.
Right now, with Dalvin Cook as a free agent, I'm going Mostert.
I might go Foreman. He's got a shot. He's got a shot. If Herbert goes down, he's going to be lead back.
I think Coleman was saying the last like 3 weeks, Donta Foreman was like identical to Nick Chubb in regards to analytics.
And Foreman looked really good last year in Carolina.
Yeah. He won me titles, baby. So I always will love Donta Foreman.
He's always been a backup and has had the lead back get injured.
Yep. All right. So now we're going to move on to Roschon, who we all love here. We said it here. Everyone said it. If Roschon wasn't following Bijan, he'd have a much higher draft capital. And even the fourth round is still pretty good in the NFL draft for running back. He didn't really land in the best situation on paper in comparison to others in the draft class. But there is a nice little place where he can carve himself out as the lead back. I know Tony is pretty in on him being the week one starter. I know that's
I think Herbert's the week one starter, and I think Roschon ends up taking it over.
Okay.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
The reason I know we're kind of both in on this is he's a dog. He catches passes and he's great in pass protection. He doesn't have elite athleticism, but you really don't need that in this style of offense because you're just running inside zone schemes and you just want him to get the chunk play instead of Fields having to do all that work.
He's the only three down back in this backfield.
Yes, correct. And I also will bet money that he has the best bet on ADP return investment out of anybody in this backfield, as he is free in drafts right now.
Yes.
He's
RB 47. And if the ceiling expectation is David Montgomery, I don't see how that isn't a possibility for the talent that Roschon possesses, as well as being a third down back who can kind of do it all. And he can also play quarterback if Justin Fields gets hurt, because he did play quarterback in college.
He's quarterback.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's all they talked about on his tape. That's all they talked about.
Every snap.
Yep.
All right. So Tyler Allgeier, Roschon Johnson, or Devin Singletary?
Roschon. I'll sit him on my bench. I won't start him for 10 weeks, and I'll be
that's
happy.
True. Yeah, I'll agree with Tony.
All right, so in summation, I'm in on Fields. He can return a top five finish with the expectation I have for him. That doesn't really put him in the unicorn tier, but I still think he can make that leap as we expect him to. He's worth his price of entry if you miss out on the top four or five guys, however you tier them. Initially, I felt DJ Moore was going to be a colossal disappointment at ADP, but I feel like he's appropriately priced right now, especially if he's your flex. I'm not upset at all about taking him there. Don't draft a tight end from this room. I'll take Roschon at cost over anyone else this year on the Bears.
There we go.
Hell yeah.
You know, I'm not upset. I thought I'd be devastated by this write-up.
I try to be more optimistic, right? Like, I will admit I'm a hater and I'm cynical when it comes to data points and fantasy analytics, but like, I'm still trying to be like, hey, we do have to take some of these guys, right? And if at the bare worst for them is, hey, I like him at price, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
Where do we have the Bears at wins this year? Did I have them at 8 wins?
I think Vegas has them at 7.5, right?
Yeah.
Or 8.5?
Yeah.
One of those two.
At 7.5. I think that's more than attainable.
Can we does anyone have their schedule pulled up?
I can pull it up.
We should go through their schedule.
They have the best rest differential versus their opponents this year.
All right, so first game, pack attack.
Okay. That'll be close, but I think it's a Bears win.
Is that in Green Bay?
Nope, that's at the Bears.
I'm in. 1-0.
That's right. Now we're getting the Bears fandom. Let's get Waleed in here.
Yeah, should have had him on this episode.
Okay, they play the Buccaneers next in Tampa.
2-0.
Yep, 2-0. It's looking good.
All right, here's where the wheels fall off. They go to KC.
Easy win. No, I'm kidding. No, that's a loss. They're 2-1.
All right, Broncos come to Soldier Field.
I think Denver wins that game.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like your defense just isn't meshing right now, right? Like it's not coming together how it needs to.
No.
Okay, so we're playing 500 ball.
All right.
Okay, you go up to ex Dan Snyder with the blimp. Commies next.
It's a Bears win.
Yeah.
And I think that's a Thursday game.
It is.
All right. Now the Vikings come to you.
That's a loss.
I think so. Yeah,
I think the Vikings will make that. That'll be one of those close games that Bears will lose by a score.
I don't think the Bears defense can. They didn't stop Justin Jefferson at all last year.
That's true.
Right. Like in the first half of the Bears Vikings game last year, Kirk Cousins didn't throw an incomplete pass.
Damn it. But you're right. I hate that. You're right. But that was
Kirk Cousins is due for regression, and their defense is going to suck ass this year. So
I'm still going. It's a Bears loss for me. I'm saying they're 3-3.
I'm just shoveling deep dish pizza into my mouth right now. Fucking trumming up the hype. All right. Next game. Raiders come to you.
Is it the Raiders?
It's the Raiders.
That's a Bears win.
Yeah. So we're 4-3.
All right, you go to LA to face the Chargers.
Ooh,
that's a loss.
It depends, right? This will be when Brandon Staley gets fired. if we choke this game and Justin Fields runs for 200 yards on our ass, he's gone.
Yeah, but I don't think I'm liking the narrative on Herbert having one of his best career years this year.
Yeah, I have the Bears at 4-4 at this point.
Okay. Now we go to Ryan's Bay. The Saints. Derek Carr.
Ooh.
That's a Bears win.
Going down to the Delta, the mighty Mississippi.
But that one, that's a close game. That could go either way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm calling it a win.
I think I'm giving it a win too, so that's 4-3.
Panthers come to you.
That's a win. 5-3. Right? Is that right? 1-2.
No, I think we're at 6-3.
That was the 10th game.
6-3? All right, let's go.
Okay. The Bears and the Lions.
Loss.
It's a loss.
All right. Next one. You're in Minnesota.
That's a loss.
It is not prime time, or it is prime time.
It's
so.
A loss.
It is prime time?
Yeah, 5:15. Kirk Cousins, Chokeville.
That's a loss.
I'm thinking that one's a loss, yeah.
Damn, you guys are going 0-2 against the Vikings?
Yep, and I'm about to have us go 0-2 against the Lions, too.
Yeah,
you guys play Lions next.
Yep. So is that what, 6 losses?
Yeah. We're 6-6, I think.
The Browns next.
That's a loss.
A really interesting game.
That's a loss.
Yeah, is it in Cleveland?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a loss.
Okay, Christmas Eve present to you from Santa Claus. You face the Cardinals in Soldier Field.
Easy dub.
Yay.
Easy dub.
Saying it's an easy win would probably be one of the worst losses we've had all year.
It's when Arizona plays himself out of 101. All right, next one. Falcons in Soldier Field.
Bears.
I like the Bears, yeah.
So final game.
7?
Final game. Eight? I think it's 8. I think you're at 8.
We're 8-8 right now. And we're going to end with a winning record, baby.
You're in Green Bay.
Yes. That's 9-8.
Win. Lock it in. I could see either way, right? Like,
it's a very Vegas line.
Yeah. Well, no. Apparently, according to the Sharp book, the forecast is 7.5.
Okay. Well, I mean, like, you have some games that are fluky, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and the Bears have the 6th easiest schedule.
Really?
And they were the worst in the league. 1-7 in one score games last year.
So let's hope that changes.
It can happen.
It can. All right. So any thoughts before we wrap for the night, gentlemen?
Am I getting crucified?
No, I love it.
All right.
That's great.
I love it. So who's everyone doing next week? You guys got any ideas?
Fuck, dude. I don't even.
My favorite bit is you not having the sheet pulled up.
Because I forget. I'm like, oh, I'm done for the week. I can relax. And I'm just like, nope. Back to the fucking well. Here we go.
Back to the mines.
We yearn for it.
All right. You still have San Francisco, Tennessee, Houston.
I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm terrified to do San Francisco. I don't know why. That team is just. I'm just like, I'm gonna say the wrong thing. I'm gonna get this team wrong. I need to just like talk to Chris, go on the phone for like an hour. Like, hey, what's the play here?
Yeah, he just did a podcast episode. I'm gonna listen to.
I'll have to listen to that too. I think I'm gonna go Houston. Houston's pretty dead set on who they're gonna do, so I think they're kind of locked in for mediocrity.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. Who is it?
Since we don't know about Hopkins, and you said maybe the Jets, I'm not gonna do the Jets yet.
I don't think he's going there. But Cook might be going to the Jets, so we'll see.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry. I think I might do Cincinnati. They seem pretty solid and. I don't think too much is up in the air for them right now.
Nah. Unless it's okay. Mixon. That's it.
I am going to go with Cleveland next week.
Ooh, double up Ohio, huh?
We're having some Skyline chili.
I was reading something on Reddit today about their cap space. They're fucked.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, I know. Because
they're boned.
Because they pushed the Deshaun contract extension up,
yeah,
or the salary ahead, so yeah, it just got even worse.
Good for them. That's what they deserve.
Yeah, fuck them. All right, so that was great job, everybody. We'll be back for 90 next week. Holy shit,
dude, we're getting geriatric up in here.
I'm so excited to put stuff in my pockets and leave the store, and if they accuse me, I'll just be like, I forgot.
Uncle Leo, I'm old.
All right, y'all. Well, good night, and we'll see you next week.
Take care, guys.
Good night.
Later.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
This is a certified Pudd Classic.
There's still 5 seconds, so they've got to get back. He does it again.